The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. And you can find all of our previous podcasts and interviews at thepulse.coopradio.org. or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm David Ball. Well, on today's show, we're talking with Karen Ward. She's an artist, advocate, and works currently for the City of Vancouver doing outreach and education, and she's a longtime critic of policies and approaches to housing and drug prohibition and policing in the downtown East Side. Karen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Pulse on Co-op Radio.
I'm very happy to be joining you indeed, David.
I've been following you so closely through this pandemic and all of your posts on social media. Social media has actually really kept, for all of its faults, kept a lot of people informed about what's happening in the neighborhood.
There's so many layers of complexity to that. I mean, first of all, you know, you've got our multiple neighborhood Facebooks running around, and then you've got that multiplied into the random nonsense. You know, there's a real problem, especially with, I mean, serious public health problems, whether it's overdose or COVID, with facts, you know. And when we're looking at social media, when we are isolated, you can't compare your facts with each other, for one thing. And we've got no media. We've got no print media left in the neighborhood. And, you know, So instead of actually facing and dealing with and figuring out ways to talk about how we're going to address the various problems, people are spending all their time debating facts, debating what's real. So I've only seen that become more pronounced over like recently, but it's always been a thing. And boy, is that distressing. You know, we have interlocking, overlapping layers of different ways people relate to each other, different networks maybe, but a lot has changed in the neighborhood very recently, you know. And we definitely have a problem across everywhere acknowledging some of these realities, you know. I mean, the primary one that we don't want to recognize as clearly as we must is that a lot of people have died.
Not just from the record numbers of overdoses in the last 2 months, which are historic records, but even just people dying of old age and sickness in hospitals. Like, we lost Chai Pig last week. We've lost a whole bunch of folks to...
People have, in the last 5 or 7 days, it's just awful. But I mean, too, like in the last 3 years, you know, there's been in the city, mostly in the neighborhood, one person every day dying. Think about that. Of overdose.
It's truly tragic, and it's ripping apart the fabric of the community sometimes.
That's exactly my point. It's that what kind of community is it when there's these, if you think of it as a fabric, let's think of it as almost like a net, and all those, the knots, the ways in which we intersected with each other. So, or regularly, see people every day. Now that's gone. You know, the connections between us are lost. The guy who I saw on the corner and bought smokes from, who then thought, well, he's dead, you know. And then like it's so tough. Like, people come down here, you're messed up. Things aren't great. You know, you don't trust a lot of people. You don't have, and when you start building those little connections, that's how we take care of each other. That's how we always said, right? That's how we take care of each other. We look out for each other. And those are the little, you know, people have been traumatized and you know, have suffered great violence. And when they finally are able to become neighbors again, that's a big deal. That means something. That's why, it means something in your heart, really. I have serious concerns about the future in the neighborhood. I don't know what it looks like. I was saying that to Smokey this morning at the memorial. I said, that's a bad feeling about this. I really, really do. It's a bad feeling about this.
You mentioned the memorial. If we can talk about Thomas for just a minute, because this incident really shook the community. I mean, you've had, you know, up to four deaths a day for the last 2 months from overdoses. But then one of the people helping at the overdose prevention site, who's a peer, who's experienced this stuff, is stabbed to death seemingly senselessly. How do you process that?
Well, it just feels like your world fell apart, doesn't it? I mean, it just feels like if I was, like, a year ago, it showed people, I was like, friend is ripping off friend. And they're stealing, people are friends from stealing from friends. Oh, my God, you know, that's not, wow, that's just no trust, no honor, nothing, no respect. Wow, that's devastating. That really messes up how you think about a place, right? And then this, a person who would be the one who's known and loved because he's there to save you, is killed by one of the people he's charged to save and knows it? What? You know, someone, like somebody else. It's like one of, like, us against us. You cannot survive this. You know, when you're this poor, you're ripping her off. When you're this close to rising the line of death, and it's just unbelievable, people. Like, we've got to stop lying to ourselves and saying, oh, we take care of each other. Yeah, we don't. We can't. Something has happened. We don't anymore. What happened? Too much poverty, I think. I think we got down too far, and no one could find their way up again. So everyone started dying, and we lost our way.
Did you tell me about the memorial today? We aired a clip of that in our news on our show, and we've been doing some specials about Thomas. But tell me about the memorial itself. It seemed well attended, and there were some very, very powerful speeches.
Yeah. Well. And I mean, it was so tough, but it was so hard to see everybody. And part of it is because why we're there, but also because we haven't been able to see each other. You know, we haven't, like, because of what's going on. You don't have chance encounters anymore. You don't run into somebody on the street. But there's just everybody. It was just really emotional. It was really emotional to gather at all, and it was tough, and you know, and people didn't. But it's true. I think Trey said, you know, it's true that Thomas would have been like, "Wow, this is great. I brought everybody together. That's cool."
One of the things that Trey said, I think that really got me right before he talked about Thomas looking down and saying, being happy to see people together. He talked about how you can get so consumed with hatred and rage that you stop seeing the good in the people around you. And that is the kind of embodiment that Thomas offered the world, was being able to be in the midst of the badness and to provide something good.
And the thing, I was telling this story to somebody just like a little while ago. I, like, way back when I, like, you know, 2017, right? It was just a few weeks after the provincial government had given permission, or, you know, the order that OPSs were legal. They were sanctioned, right? That had just happened. And there was a meeting. He was over, you know, doing off, and I was at Van Dew at the time. And there was a community meeting, and he invited, you know, open invitation, to the health authority wanted to put a couple of new sites, just very small. So the neighbors of that neighborhood were against this. So we went, and a lot of us went, and I made this thing and talked about how actually this is how that would work. And you're actually not going to, the point is to not have problems on your street because people will have somewhere to go. And it didn't matter. They were still against it. They wouldn't have this. And Todd, after the thing was over, so I was, it was a tough meeting, but after the thing was over, he followed me, why? He didn't understand what these were respectable middle class people who were against him wanting to save people's lives. They weren't going to give us permission to save each other's lives. They thought that he had that right, and then they just were against it. And he just was shocked. He was shocked at that. And it wasn't because he'd never heard, you know, he was just like, I don't understand. He was like, he didn't have to think about it or debate it in his head. He knew people were good, fundamentally. And he was like, well, and he was just like, they won't let us save each other. It's not going to hurt them. I was like, yeah, exactly. 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 And I was like, clarity, like, get a moral clarity, you know? And I found that, God, like, first, really, really, you'd have these little talks and these things. And I just, like, just a, not refreshing, but encouraging in the classic, gave me courage too.
I'm so sorry for your loss and for the whole communities. Yeah, it really hit me hard. And I hadn't met him, but I'd been inspired by hearing about him before, you know, from the photo essay that was in the Tai a few weeks ago to even before that, he was quoted in, a Vice article a while back. And I recognized his face, you know. But it's just shocking because also I know Sarah and I know a bunch of the people at the OPS sites and Tara and all these folks who do so much work and just think about how that would hit a community like that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, you know, in a lot of ways, it reminds me a bit of when Tracy died, you know, because it's just somebody in the neighborhood and something happens and it's just like, you're just like, no, they can't die.
Tracy Morrison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't die. Thomas can't die. Who's going to save us?
We've sort of seen this rhetoric arise from outside the neighborhood, I think sparked by the Strathcona camp and the Oppenheimer camp and people doing kind of disaster tourism through the neighborhood where they say, it's worse than ever. There's needles everywhere. There's drug use everywhere. There's these horrible incidents like the poor baby and the mom in the outhouse during the pandemic. And how do you respond to that as someone who loves the neighborhood and doesn't want to hurt it?
We are having a very, very hard time. We are having a very hard time. I've been saying not couching it at all. We are having a very hard time. Things are getting worse. It feels like the street is falling out from under us. Please help. We need to make some changes now before it's too late. I have some ideas for some changes that are actually about justice. And maybe please stop telling us where we should go. Like, we have yet another plan from Dr. McEwen to institutionalize everybody. Yet another plan. You know, this is actually, you don't even have to ask us. I've got it all written out here in a nice report of what we could do. That isn't crap and isn't the same old like pie in the sky thing that people have been doing but actually not doing for years. You know, housing now. Well, there's no housing. There's none. No, that's nice to say. Let's actually do it. And instead of just complaining and debating the reality. If you're going to complain about it, help and pay for it and help. And we need some experiences, people to say, look, I'll just shut up. Tell me what you need. Let's just figure this out. I don't want to have another report and another task force. I have no time to go learn these skills and I have no money. And let's just get, maybe an accountant would be nice instead of like, let's get some doctors to prescribe pills that are medicines and drugs. Let's just do that. I don't want to have any more debate. If everybody else in Vancouver is going to continue to be like, oh, yes, public assembly, let's discuss it and say how crap it is. Yeah, this is what this is the consequences of structural violence. It's the downtown east side. You don't want to look at it because, yes, you are responsible.
Where do you kind of draw the line between saying, yes, the neighborhood is getting worse, that the suffering is increasing, and things like residents associations and homeowners associations saying it's a waste of money and they should have a financial audit of all the organizations?
Yeah. I mean, frankly, David, I wouldn't mind if some of the nonprofit organizations, please come on in and audit them. I mean, people want to have a future and they want to have hope. They can't like this. It feels like it's a bunch of, you know, trapped animals clawing each other's eyes out. Because that's how we feel, too. You know, you remember the story about Rat Park, David?
No, I haven't heard of Rat Park. Tell me the story.
So Rat Park was like, you know, rats aren't good when they're in a cage. They did this experiment, Bruce Alexander, back in the 70s. You put some heroin in a bottle, and the rats in a cage, bloody place is miserable. Oh, my God, heroin. Drinks all the heroin, and then dies, overdoses and dies. But if you make Rat Park, if you get the rat friends, and a rat, you know, give the boy rat girlfriends, and there's a nice place to play, and there's a wheel, and this and that, and bright light, and some heroin. You know what? They're not that interested in the heroin because they've got lots of things to do. Yeah, and they don't perceive themselves as being in a cage. But they have better things to do than sit around and do drugs. Of course they have better things to do. They got to go be rats. But we're not, this is, you know, this is not Rat Park. No.
Are there some aspects? Are there some organizations doing something that's sort of like that, that is providing for the neighborhood, that is doing it in a good way?
Yeah, some are. Some did. Many could. Let's put it that way. And that's the thing. There's lots of ways to do that. It's not that complicated, right? I mean, things like when Gachet got the cut from VCH, and we had to, and they had to really, really scale back.
And that was the artist-run gallery, the resident artist-run gallery you were part of.
Yeah, and it's like you can't. That was this aspect where it's like, well, of course, anyone would rather do art than drugs. Of course, you'd rather do art. Of course, you would. And now we can't pay for that? What are we thinking? That's what I mean.
I think of some of the smaller organizations that don't get the $30 million a year, but are doing work like, Wish Drop-In, their beauty nights, or Heist for Humanity, or, the band at the Carnegie, that kind of stuff, the choirs at the Woodward.
And when you've got the choice, you've got a range of things to do. You've got options. I mean, that's what I keep saying. What people lack in their lives are options. They're just put into places and that's it. A couple of people moved into Woodward here not too long ago, and somebody was still saying, the only way you get out of here is in cuffs or a bag. That's very dark, but that's how that's what social housing has become. The exit is death or prison. I mean, this is you can do better than this. People need to have self-determination. Otherwise, yeah, they are going to be pretty miserable.
You and I were talking on Twitter last week after this homeowners organization Step Up that doesn't want the provincial taxes on empty homes and speculation and mansions. They said that harm reduction is a social experiment and we need to go back to the drawing board and see why it isn't working, why there's still homeless people and why these camps keep moving around to parks. What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, harm reduction is working. And you want to take it back to a concept. It's actually in the name. It doesn't say harm elimination. It's harm reduction. And the fact is, if you look at it historically, harm has gotten much more dangerous than it was 7 or 8 years ago. And that's a combination of both really obvious things like, poverty, which led to, complicated things, but one of the consequences was fentanyl, right? Because it's cheap, because it has a huge profit margin. They're linked, and the poverty, homelessness, I'm waiting for some reporter to ask the VPD about how that mental health crisis all worked out from a few years back. Because it seems to be the best part of what's at play right now, too. Mm. And the fact that we've got all this housing is all, it's all in here. It's all low income all the time. Social mix, terrible, bad, bad, bad. Actually, we can probably design healthier communities or give people a chance to create their own. Because what's happening here? I think Travis did something about this. He looked into some, the mortality rates in social housing in the neighborhood are extraordinarily high. And it's overdose plus. It's the fact that it's just the way that people, live or not, I guess. But it's also the way that, it's this lie about we take care of each other. Yes, it's not about blame. But we have these are serious problems, and we just got to acknowledge that it isn't what it was. We've got a big nostalgia thing happening here, and I don't even know what it connects to anymore. It's become a big problem. It's not 1998 with heroin and this and that and insight and heroes. I mean, is it a social experiment? Oh, okay. Well, so is capitalism, not working, but. Harm reduction is not about keep doing the same thing by rote year after year, no matter what the situation is. It's actually a dynamic response that fundamentally recognizes a hostile world. One of the ways that harm reduction can fail, is when it becomes institutionalized.
The concept of harm reduction, when you have some compassion for the people's situations. It doesn't just apply to drugs.
It does not just apply to drugs. Well, let's apply it to COVID. Harm reduction means we would be recognizing that we can't actually stop this virus, right? We can't. It's in the world. It's here. We are in the world. We can't stop it because, it's a novel core, blah, blah, blah. Novel coronavirus. We have no vaccine. There is no cure. So we can't stop it, but we can reduce our the likelihood of infection. We can reduce the harm that it causes in our community. If we, information is one big way to reduce some harm. Knowledge is great. We could also masks, also face, all these different things, and that's actually harm reduction. For me, it starts with a honest look, as honest as you can, learn as much as you can. Let's honestly take a look ahead at what we're facing, and then how can we, we can't avoid it. So how can we figure out a way to get through that ourselves and each other, and keep each other as safe as we can, whatever we're facing, whatever it may be. COVID's a great example. Yeah.
Do you think how much is COVID related to the worsening suffering that you've seen in the neighborhood? And how much is that just an exacerbating factor of what was happening before?
COVID amplifies. It makes things that are already happening in any community, any city, any situation, it amplifies them. So you already have really tough drug policies, anti-drug policies in a place. Well, those are going to get ramped right up exponentially. Things are going badly here with the drugs and this and that. I mean, it's heartbreaking because we were just turning a corner, but we had the deaths were down in 2019 by one third. There were in BC, there were 1,000 deaths. The year before that, there were 1,500. Unbelievable. But they were down by a third, so, and it was a struggle. But we got to, May, March, and I was like, I was saying, this is going to happen. Here it comes. This is what's happening. And I hate it, but I was right. And deaths doubled. They're going to continue to climb up a little bit here, up. And then when we get the big waves down here, it's going to be brutal. And it will be, because we're not taking it seriously enough here. The first thing that we can do in the city when this is happening is worry about the patios. I'm sorry, we're in trouble when that's the first thing we spend time on.
The Downtown East Side has offered some pretty big lessons of how dangerous this whole situation can be, even without COVID deaths, even though the Downtown East Side has been spared the worst excesses of the fears we had for the neighborhood. Actually, more people died from the overdoses than any, the numbers of COVID deaths here.
Yeah, I mean, that was due to a lot of work. Information, getting stuff out, and all kinds of things combined to have no COVID outbreak, in the neighborhood. But I found this out. This is horrifying. The Stats Canada, this is how they keep track of it. I guess it's a public health thing too. Here's your number in a population. Let's say it's BC. Here's your number of regular deaths that we have all the time on average over this course period of time. Okay. And it's like, okay, here's your COVID death for that period of time. And that's another number over here. Oh, what's this number up here? But that number and that number don't equal the number of deaths.
They call that excess mortality.
Yes, mortality. Just extra people dying. We're not sure what, but they're consequences of all these different measures, right? They say, they say unintended consequences. And I always say, how can that be unintended if I told you it would happen, right? And they're like, well, we didn't mean it to happen. I'm like, yeah, but you saw it coming. You can't deny it. It's bad, bad, bad. And we can prevent this, is my point. We absolutely can. It doesn't need to be this way.
What's the one thing that you want to see change? If there was one simple policy thing, or not simple, just any policy thing that would prepare us for the second wave and the long run in the neighborhood.
If we could take to heart the idea that the best prevention is spreading out, that is that the way We've got to find housing everywhere. You know, we've got to give people, we can't have a gigantic little, like a gigantic crammed together tent city in a park. Let's have a dozen everywhere. You know, let's give ourselves room to breathe. Not just us, but everyone else too. If we take that basic principle that the more space we create, you know, the more space we'll all have for longer, because we'll, you know, that's the best. We can't keep living like this. We can't. We won't. Actually, we won't live.
We need a rat park.
Everywhere. We got to spread this out. We got to recognize if we're not all in rat park, it's just another cage.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's great to talk to you, and come on again, okay?
Okay, take care.
And that was Karen Ward, an artist, advocate, and resident of the Downtown East Side who currently works for the City of Vancouver doing peer education and outreach in the Downtown East Side. You can follow her on Twitter at @KWardVancouver.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.